Do you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
When you think about all the topics that are important to us as we age, there are some themes that are just recurring. Mm-hmm. More than that, they're constant. And one of those mm-hmm. themes is long-term care. How do you pay for long-term care? Well, today we are talking to an expert in long-term care planning. So we will we'll be talking about all those topics that relate to that, whether it's Medicare, whether it's supplemental, Advantage plans, long-term care insurance. What can we expect? Are there some tips and hints that we can take so that we can head off some of the challenges that are likely to occur down the road? All these things we'll be covering during the next hour. Susan, tell us about our guest.
Well, we do have a long-term health care planning guest with us today. His name is Mike Butts, and he has over 30 years' experience working with life and health insurance. He is owns his own company. It's an independent company called MB Health, and he is going to give us a wealth of information. We are happy that you're here today. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome.
Mike is a bit of an institution in St. Louis. There are 11 of them.
The last name might be a little familiar to some of you, too.
Yeah, Mike Butts. And he has a famous brother. Well, he has a couple of siblings that are. But his brother, Norbert, didn't he win Tonys? Is that right, Mike?
He's won 2 Tony Awards.
On Broadway. For what plays?
He did 2 with Dirty Rotten Scoundrel and Catch Me If You Can.
And he was the lead actor.
The lead actor of both of those and many others.
Yeah, and plus he's on some Netflix series that are very popular right now. What was one that you had mentioned?
There's one called Bloodline.
Uh-huh.
And it's I wouldn't necessarily say it's not a family show. It's the Dallas of the 70s brought to the year 2020. It's a little rough language, but it's very good.
Well, anyway, so Mike is he and his family are an institution in this area and beyond. Yeah. And his family business has focused on long-term care. And so while there are other products, for lack of a better word, that you might, your business or your firm might mm-hmm. offer, the specialty that you've had over the past 30 years has been focusing on needs related to healthcare. Is that right?
That's right. Exactly.
So in inviting Mike to come on today, we talked about the fact that this is a show whose audience is 60 and above. And so we want to present very useful, practical information to our audience. And this just seemed to be, right in the center of the target. So let me ask you a kind of a general question. What can we expect as we look into the next 10 to 20 years in terms of the lay of the land, costs? What will the healthcare scenario be like? Can you anticipate any of those things as it pertains to people who are above 60?
Unfortunately, in my opinion, I only see it in the context that costs are going to be going up. It's just going to cost. It's important from my vantage point that when I talk with persons that a lot of us do our retirement planning and our senior year planning based on the experiences we had either with our immediate parents or maybe our grandparents or friends or associates. And that picture is a fraction of what we've got coming because of the population boost of the baby boom generation. Our nation hasn't faced the healthcare costs for the senior generation. When the baby boom generation hits their senior years, the cost to support that generation are going to be more than what we've ever experienced before.
And it's kind of the perfect storm because mm-hmm. in addition to that, apart from that demographic tidal wave, are all the capabilities. We developed so many technologies and medications
Absolutely.
And procedures. Right. And so now we have all these things that while they're wonderful and they can achieve great results, they're not cheap. They're very, very expensive in most cases.
And because of the volume of the demand.
And they cause us to live longer. I mean, those are all great things, again, but we've got lots of expenses with it.
The expenses, and then it comes with the expectations of this generation, that baby boom generation. So we were benefactors as a nation. So I'm just 55. our nation benefited from the most industrial generation to come along for the expansion of economics. Now that generation has the same level of expectation in their senior years for services they're going to demand. And we don't have the infrastructure to support that volume of bodies. And so that's supply and demand.
So the greatest generation may have the greatest expectations.
Amen. And we got to call on our next generations to create innovative solutions to provide that service for them in a way that meets those expectations but can be done economically. But that's going to take a while to work that through.
Yeah, and for clarification, I mean, this is technically the generation that followed the greatest generation, right? Mm-hmm. So really it's the baby boomers who are the children of many of the heroes of World War II.
But that World War II generation, they're the first ones that the baby boomers are demanding the services for that generation. So we're just meeting that demand, followed by an increased population coming behind it.
Huh.
You see what I mean? So they're not demanding, that's a negative way of phrasing it, properly expecting and caring for their parents from that great generation. But that's just setting the standard for what they're going to need, but we're going to have a multiple of the population needing that level of care. Exponential conversation.
Yeah. So then let's talk about practical solutions. And let's begin by dealing with this whole issue about national health insurance, Affordable Care Act. I know Republicans are proposing something that would repeal and replace Obamacare. Is that discussion of primary relevance to our audience?
It's not primary, but it definitely should be in their vision to be aware of it, because it's going to have an impact on our entire healthcare system, which will feel that effect for 20 or 30 years down the road. But it won't be the primary because the Affordable Care Act as it stands at the moment is not affecting Medicare. It's not affecting our immediate seniors. So for the next decade, say, it's not going to really change the immediate cost of it, but 10 plus years, it's going to have a big impact.
Okay, so I wanted to deal with that so that we can make this conversation as understandable as possible. So let's assume then that for many of the people listening today, that they're concerned about their healthcare needs for the next 10, 15, 20 years, and that whole discussion regarding Obamacare may not be as directly relevant to them because as presently designed, it's not going to impact Medicare. So we're going to set that aside then in this conversation, mm-hmm. and allow people to have a little better understanding in terms of what practical things should they do.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Medicare. Do you have, can you give first of all a little bit of an overview of that plan and some of the issues that you regularly advise clients about as it relates to Medicare? Is that too broad a question?
No, it's not too broad. I mean, I don't know how I'd really comment on what direction to kind of go with that. Medicare in itself and its base is a plan that really was created back in whenever it began, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, or whatever in our history. Again, it was created not for the population that we got coming in, but it's extremely high level of coverage. So Medicare in itself provides a very high level of coverage. So that's why it's difficult to afford it. And I don't think that's going to alter for the immediate future. And then we just, as consumers, how do we then plan to supplement whatever Medicare does not cover or what other alternatives that can come out of that?
And it's interesting, while Medicare is very comprehensive in a sense, it doesn't cover long-term care, does it?
Correct. It's the one segment. So now for seniors in our long-term plannings, our healthcare plannings, long-term care is going to be a topic our government, in my opinion, will not address because it's too big of an iceberg. It's too big of a deal. So it's the one key area that we have a gap in our insurance coverages.
So then what is the menu of options that someone faces when they are coming upon eligibility for Medicare, they're about to sign up, and suddenly they're hearing about supplemental insurance, they're hearing about Advantage C options?
Parts A and B.
Right. Yeah, can you give some explanation of that?
Sure, they all gotta go together. There's a little trivia question I pose to our clients all the time. There's actually four parts: A, B, C, and D. And so, it kind of depends which way you want to kind of go with it. The Medicare Advantage plans is just private insurance, so you waive out of the government. you waive out of Medicare, you disenroll from Medicare. Medicare has nothing to do with you, and you replace that with this private HMO plan called the Medicare Advantage.
So but it's paid HMO for. Plan. It's paid for, though, by the federal government. Is that correct?
It's funded. Funded. So all the our government does is if I, as a consumer, choose the Medicare Advantage plan, I'm just telling my government, whatever money you've got escrowed for me for my long-term health care, my medical expenses, not long-term care needs, my medical expenses, send that money to my HMO of choice. And that's their funding. My healthcare then is their challenge. It's their funding and my healthcare expenses, and they have to do that for a profit.
Now, why would someone choose an Advantage plan over the mainstream Medicare program?
The number one issue, the number one jumps out to is that it doesn't cost any extra premium to join a Medicare Advantage plan. They're to the consumer a zero additional premium to join the Medicare Advantage plans. Contrast that to staying in Medicare and buying a supplement. You'll pay a premium anywhere from $100 to $200 or maybe $300 a month for that supplement.
Why would you have to buy a supplement for Medicare?
You don't really. That's a great question. And a lot of seniors are going to find they won't have supplements in the future. They may not. Medicare in itself, A and B, just A and B that we get as taxpayers and we're going to contribute to it. The base coverage of that provides is very comprehensive. It's very large. Medicare A, Part A, covers the hospital charges. So when you go to Barnes and you have bypass surgery, there's a part of that bill that was from Barnes. Part of that's from all the doctors and supplemental services. The Barnes bill is covered 100% by Medicare after about an $1,100 deductible. So that's not bad coverage just in itself.
No.
Part B for all the supplemental coverages of the supplemental services, the doctors, the nurses, the Band-Aids, and so forth, that's covered 80% by Part B. You're responsible for 20%. So we buy supplements for two basic reasons. Number one, that deductible on Part A is a per confinement deductible. So if I find myself hospitalized repeated times that were separated throughout the year, I could have repeated $1,000 deductibles. So we buy it for that. But then most importantly, the 20% of Part B, there's no cap on that. So if I have $100,000 in surgeon fees, I'm responsible for $20,000 of that. You follow what I'm saying? So that 20%, there's no cap. And so my supplement covers that 20% for me.
So the hospital costs, I know I'm oversimplifying. The hospital costs are Part A.
Yes.
And the doctor's bills are, we'll call Part B.
Correct.
And some other tests and whatnot. And that as to Part B, there's a copay essentially of 20% of the total.
It's called
cost.
Coinsurance.
And so you're right. So if somebody had a $100,000 bill in a given year, they're out $20,000. So between the deductible and the coinsurance, mm-hmm. that you know somebody, even though they have good health care coverage through Medicare, the generic product could leave them still owing a ton of money.
A lot of money. But I mentioned to people, you know, okay, so on that $80,000 I owe, or that $100,000 bill, I owe 20, but they paid 80. So my point is the overwhelming amount of it's already been covered by Medicare. And then we're going to find here in our society, there's going to be charitable services or the hospital doesn't collect that 20. There's other means to manage that 20% expense. I'm talking in real broad strokes. So I'm saying this for some people, not having a supplement, I know this may be taboo to say, is not the worst decision in the world to not have the supplement. I wouldn't recommend it, but it's not like going, if you're under age 65, it's not like going without health insurance.
Yeah.
So it's
right.
Not like having, I have nothing. So mm-hmm. I have 80% of my bill covered wherever I go.
But the point is, it's clear, I think, to those listening that supplemental insurance, if it's going to pick up that 20%.
Mm-hmm. It's prudent.
As well mm-hmm. as the deductible, then
that, it's prudent. And they're coming up with now there's different choices on what kind of supplements you can purchase. And they're varying different premiums and different functions. And that's where the marketplace has responded with different products on that.
So the supplemental, though, which is what we were just now talking about, mm-hmm. is different from the HMOs, the managed care networks
yes.
that can be done. It's called Advantage C, right?
Yes, yes. So when you're over here, so going back on, you have Part A and Part B, and then I'm just conceding, I'll agree with you, should have a supplement. Then the person also needs, by the law, you need Part D, and that's your prescription drug coverage. So if you're going to stay in Medicare, you need A and B, a supplement, and Part D. That's a separate policy just for your prescription drugs. So the question, the trivia question is, what's Part C? And Part C replaces A, B, supplement, and D for one Part C. And that's your Medicare Advantage plan. So your Medicare Advantage plan, though the flip side to it, you've waived out of Medicare and you're in the HMO. So now I'm in a private insurance plan and they manage those plans. HMO is another way of saying it for the Medicare Advantage. The Medicare Advantage is a fancy word that the street uses. In my opinion, we should just call them HMOs. That's not a nasty word. It just is what it is. If we say it in the opposite of the HMO is an acronym, it stands for Health Maintenance Organization. If you say it in the reverse, it's an organization to maintain your health. Their job is to maintain your healthcare expenses and to do it more effectively, ideally, and profitably, cost-effectively, than what our government's doing with Medicare. That's the competing alternative.
Okay, we got a break. We'll be back in a few moments. We'll pick up right here in our discussion.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
We're back, and we're picking up with Mike Butts, our expert in long-term care and health planning for people 60 and above, especially. Been doing this 30-plus years. His family's an institution in the St. Louis area, and their firm is an institution. So, Mike, I want to pick up where we were. So I think you were doing a good job of laying out this complicated discussion that people face when they become eligible for Medicare. Suddenly they're told, well, you can get supplemental insurance, or maybe instead of that, you'll want to go with a Medicare Advantage plan. Mm-hmm. And I think you were distinguishing between those two plans. And can you make a recommendation of the pros and cons of each?
The biggest pros and cons of... The biggest pro for Medicare, staying in Medicare, it leaves you, the consumer, you, the patient, pretty much in charge of, I can go to any doctor, any hospital, anywhere I want around the country.
So you can't do that if you do a Medicare Advantage plan?
No, that's kind of the inverse to it. So again, we mentioned before, Medicare Advantage, just think of it as another word, they are an HMO in, for all practical purposes. It's not technically correct in some sense, but it's for all practical purposes, it is. It's a health maintenance organization. Is the acronym HMO. If you say it on the reverse, I'll say it's an organization. Their job is to maintain your health. Part of that management is they say, instead of just going to the yellow pages for your health care or just whatever Medicare says, here's our list of doctors and hospitals. And we manage who gives you care. That's our job, is to manage how they give you care and when they give you care. But you have to go to our doctors.
So you have to select from a list of their providers, yes. Whether it's a radiologist, whether
correct.
It's a general practitioner,
correct.
Even hospitals.
Correct.
But because they're able to concentrate their services, they're able to negotiate more aggressive deals with these healthcare providers.
Exactly. The whole mantra of the whole drumbeat of our healthcare system is to how do we deliver needed health services at a lower cost? That is the overarching problem for all generations. So then we go to our senior generation. That's how the HMOs came about.
So is it reasonable then for someone to expect that if they choose to go with a Medicare Advantage plan, mm-hmm. that because they're getting rid of deductibles, they're getting rid of the coinsurance payments, that they could potentially not have to pay anything and have all their medical costs covered?
So no, not quite. So what they have, so the HMOs are the opposite of your Medicare and your supplement. The HMOs, the Medicare Advantage plans, there are zero premium to join, zero additional. Now, it's real important to mention here real quick. We all, as U.S. citizens, need to contribute a premium for Part B. That's created by the government, and that's a Part B contribution.
Even with Advantage?
Correct. Mm-hmm. I pay that Part B premium no matter what decision I do.
And how much is that?
Now it's about $105, $110 a month.
Okay.
And that's gone up through the years, and it's going to continue to go up. So it's about $110 a month on average. And if you make more, you pay more and things of that nature. But on average, that's about what it is. So the HMOs then come along and say, there's no additional premium, but now every time you go see a doctor or hospital, you have a co-pay, not co-insurance per se, a co-pay.
It's not a percentage.
It's not a percentage. They're going to name you a dollar to see your doctor, to have that surgery, to have that operation, that night stay. It's a specified dollar. Now, the plans come what they call a max out-of-pocket. So no matter how sick or chronically ill I get, how much I consume, you add up all those copays. When I hit this max out-of-pocket of my expenses, I'm 100% covered, unlimited.
So what might that max be?
It's in the neighborhood of about $3,000 a year, $3,000 to $3,500 a year.
That is still a bargain.
That's the inverse to it. So over here on the Medicare side, the advantage of it is that I get to go wherever I want to go, however I want to go, but my premium is $100 to $300 a month. Now, the premium I'm going to spend whether I get sick or hurt. I may get really sick or I never see a doctor, but I spent that money.
Right.
Knowing I have coverage if I got sick or hurt. The Medicare Advantage is the opposite. I'm going to have zero premium, but I will spend a little bit every time I consume. Knowing I have a cap, but I'll spend it as I incur it, if I incur it. If I didn't get chronically ill, I never spent it. If I got chronically ill, I've got the coverage and I've got a cap of max out of pocket.
And are prescription drugs typically covered on those Medicare
Advantage
plans?
Yes, so I don't have that premium. So your Medicare Advantage plans include your Part D coverage. It comes with it.
I mean, it just seems so much cheaper. I mean, in addition to the fact that you're paying only when you have the cost.
You do, but then the negative, the con of it, is the HMO. I am going to their list of doctors, and I need referrals, and I need permission for their care from this third-party insurance company versus what the government approves.
Because if you need to see, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you need to see a specialist, you have to have a referral or someone to say, yes, this person is approved to go see this specialist and we'll pay for it. But
exactly.
If you go out of without that specialist there, or you go to a facility that's not covered, then you're stuck with the whole entire bill, right?
That's correct. And if it goes literally to that level. But so on the Medicare side, again, back to that thing, I can see anybody I want any day, any time. I don't really need referrals. They do it as professional courtesies. So doctors give referrals all the time as a courtesy, but it's not a requirement of the insurance. On the HMO products, overwhelmingly, not in all cases, but in vast majority, the referrals are needed. And some people don't want to deal with that.
A question I have too is how often on the HMOs, let's say I look through the list and I say, yippee, my doctor's on there. How often do they change? Because I could have the HMO or the Medicare Advantage plan, and then all of a sudden my doctor is no longer one of their contracting physicians, and then I'm choosing a new one, or can I then opt into Medicare?
So there's twofold on that question. So the doctor networks on general change only once a year. Generally around open enrollment time, which is January 1st. Generally, that's when it all changes. However, now related, and I don't want to go down this road because we mentioned we don't want to connect to the Affordable Care Act, but our healthcare community is changing. So doctors' practices and hospitals, they're merging and they're combining. Well, if I'm a doctor here and I merge with you, you may not have a contract now with my HMO that I was with. So therefore, I'm leaving that HMO because now I'm part of your organization. So the market, our healthcare our doctor practices, as they merge and grow, those practices need their contracts with those HMOs. So the management of that network, to your point, is a responsibility of the HMO. And here in St. Louis, we're in Missouri, I would say, but specifically in St. Louis, we're blessed with an extremely strong HMO market. So that really doesn't run too big of a problem on general terms. There is an occasional time where the doctor that I want is not there, but that would be a rarity because those networks are very large and sufficient.
But still, though, why would somebody who is a, you know, an internationally famous surgeon at WashU Medical School and others of comparable renown, why should they agree to the terms exacted by an HMO regarding their charges?
I mean, when they have people lined up. Yeah, that's a real. Now you're bringing in, there's going to be another whole style of healthcare we're going to have called concierge services, where the doctors are saying, you just pay me cash for what I do. I'm not going to be subject to anybody's demands. That's one option. But the other reason to your question is because their patient load is joining these plans. And if they want to service those patients, they have to join those plans. there's a mass amount of consumers joining these HMO plans. So by default, doc, if you want me to be your doc, I need you in this HMO plan.
But a doctor would potentially or probably be taking a pay cut, would he not, when
Absolutely.
He accepts these deals?
Absolutely.
So why should I not suspect that an HMO is less likely to have the best, most renowned doctors?
Because on the other side of the equation, the Medicare world are slashing their reimbursement amounts that they pay doctors as well. The cost, that's the remuneration, that's again related to a comment we just made. That's why you're seeing mass mergers and changes in doctors' practices. I'm not beating up doctors at all. The insurance industry has gone through this. You can't afford to be your sole practice. I can't see enough patients. If I used to be the sole doctor, it used to be, you know, my when we were kids, we had our one doctor because he couldn't handle the patient load of the volume that he needed because of the reduction of the remuneration per patient. So they've got to join larger practices, and that's why we get shorter times with our doctors. And mm-hmm. there's a scarcity that goes involved with that.
You know, I have a daughter that plans to go to medical school, and she's still in undergrad.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tell her that she needs to think this through. I mean, think about these doctors. I mean, they're not, for most of us, sympathetic figures, right? However, I mean, they're subject to this encroaching bureaucracy that you're describing.
Absolutely.
I mean, they're being told by these MBAs that mm-hmm. incidentally that they're now employed by that they have to see so many patients, they have to crank out certain levels of productivity. I mean, it's almost like they're becoming a glorified factory worker in some ways, and it's a shame that the medical profession has come to that. But when you're describing,
to the earlier comment we said of the overarching drumbeat, how do we provide healthcare services to a massively growing population?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a scarcity of services, and that's just what we're going to be facing in many industries. In many industries, this is a parallel comment. Many industries is a parallel comment. And so the medical community is absolutely being subject to it. That's what I would argue with some persons. The question of it is, so one would say, if I'm in Medicare, I've got this supplement, so therefore I get this freedom to go see anybody I want. That's great. So that's what it does. However, every medical practice you go to are already operating as if you're an HMO patient. So you're getting the services comparable to what an HMO person's going to get, but you're paying a premium in addition.
Meaning like the average weight, the
Correct.
Average amount
you're,
of time
you're still
you
getting, you're not going to get your doctor's choices. You're not going to get the advantage where the Medicare really comes to play. Because we experienced this in my own family, is when I get to a real chronic situation that is mysterious and I need to just see another doctor in another place. It gives me that freedom to go see somebody at Barnes versus St. John's versus St. Mary's versus whatever, that I can go see anybody I want. In the HMO system, I'm within the confines of that list of the doctors they have.
So if for example, you have a supplemental plan and you decide that, or even you don't have a supplemental plan, but you decide that you want to get on a plane and go to Mayo and see a doctor
Correct.
About something,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be
Correct.
Paid. It'll just be paid at the stipulated percentages.
Correct. And your supplement will cover on those things if Medicare approves it. The HMOs have the ability, they can approve you to go to Mayo, but it's up to them to decide if that is needed. If the services here at Barnes are sufficient or whatever, well, then that's your choice, or go out and pay for it yourself.
Yeah.
So it's and so we had a again in our institution of our family. So we had a brother that I had a brother as well passed away from cancer, and he was under one treatment of care at one place, and then it wasn't going well, and we just changed to another place over in Southern Illinois, and it extended his life a couple 3 years. I'm not saying was that worth it or right or wrong, but I'm saying they were able to make that decision by their control. Under the HMO system, that would not have been possible. Now, that's a rarity of a situation. It does come up. And when we get to our senior population, our health can be very dynamic and it can be very fluid. And now you've got children, adult children, mm-hmm. who are very concerned about their parents and say, Doc, I know what you're doing here, but you know, I want another opinion at these guys over here. So it's not the patient making the decision, it's the caregivers making the decisions. And they can be different opinions. And it can be a challenge. It's a problem.
So when do people make these decisions, these threshold decisions? Am I going to just go with the bare bones Medicare? Am I going to get a supplemental plan, or am I going to do Medicare Advantage and then, of course, the drug plan?
Give or take 6 months, 3 to 6 months before you turn 65 or become Medicare eligible. So again, in this conversation, this could be for persons that had a disability prior to age 65. They're treated the same way. So 3 to 6 months prior to becoming eligible for Medicare, you should have these discussions with your professional. These are options to bring up, because once you go to them, generally, we can't change a lot, but every open enrollment. However, I've described with people, between Medicare and the Medicare Advantage world, think of it like a steel curtain between the two of them. They're just polar opposites. Our current system allows me to go from Medicare to the Medicare Advantage every January 1st, no questions asked, no problem. However, you can't come from the Medicare Advantage back to Medicare. You can go back to Medicare. So here, this kind of differential is what I'm saying. You can go back to Medicare A and B, but the supplement doesn't have to accept you. You have to medically qualify to be approved to get the supplement. So if I'm a person, say I joined a Medicare HMO plan, an Advantage plan, when I'm 65, going great, everything's going great. Now I'm 72 years of age, and I've got early Alzheimer's coming on, and I now want other care than what this is happening here. I can go back to Medicare A and B, and D, the prescription drug plan, but that supplement does not have to accept me.
So you would still be then subject to the extra 20%.
Sure.
Right?
You run the risk that I may not get that supplement back. So that's another financial consideration that, although some patients, particularly when they get involved with long-term care facilities, it's another whole topic, another whole problem. When I'm in a long-term care facility, which one do I really want to be in, the Medicare Advantage plans or in the Medicare plan? That's a big debate. That's a big problem. That would be a negative of the Medicare Advantage plans, in my opinion.
So then let's go back and be sure that our listeners are clear.
Yeah, that was a mouthful right there.
Right. So, but if someone wants to go with the supplemental plan, when's the best time to do it? So that they know
when they're first age 65, when they're first eligible for 65.
So everybody needs to note that, you know, you take a chance if you pass that open door at the
or initial. If I'm a retiree, say I worked until I'm 72 and now I'm leaving my employer at that age. So whenever you're first eligible for Medicare, 3 to 6 months before that point, you need this discussion.
So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to address, why do you need long-term care insurance if you have this marvelous plan that you've been describing? Back in a moment.
You're listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors. Presented by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA, Joe Cordell.
So we're back with Mike Butts, our expert on long-term care planning, especially as it relates to health care. So Mike, before we went into the break, we were talking about how wonderful and comprehensive Medicare potentially can be. And so people can choose to go with a supplemental plan by which they will be able to choose their own docs and be able to get rid of the copay or the coinsurance, the deductibles, et cetera. Or they can go with an Advantage plan with which they have to stay within a network. That's a disadvantage. But the good news is they're out very little money. It's a specific dollar amount that adds up to a total of around $3,000, for example, a year.
Correct.
Worst case scenario, which is an incredible benefit.
Big savings.
So all this is good news. Why then would someone be concerned about their long-term care as they get older?
Because long-term care as a general topic is specifically excluded from our Medicare system.
And explain that.
It doesn't cover it, just flat out. It just doesn't. It provides for a basic level. If you think of what we may need in long-term care terminology, there's varying levels of care. So long-term care doesn't mean I'm just sick and I need it for a long-term period of time. It's a categorical topic that is involving a whole range of care, from I just need basic help in my home to maybe do some basic things, all the way to the point that I'm a stroke person and I need extensive skilled care for a long period of time. The topic of long-term care encompasses that spectrum.
So the idea, just so our listeners are clear, the idea is that Medicare is intended to treat an illness or an injury.
Yeah.
So the notion is that it's administering professional health care for you to improve.
Yes.
And to the extent that you have a chronic condition, which almost by definition, that's what people as they get older, those are the conditions they have. If they don't have what's called an acute condition, and that's the classic scenario when you go to a doctor, you end up in a hospital, you're getting treatment. Mm-hmm. And these are people, though, who just need continuing attention. And by the definitions of Medicare, this is not covered, right?
That's right.
And this largely describes the situation of, you know, 95% of the people in nursing homes across America.
Well, and where we're all going to end up there probably, or most of us are going to end up in that situation where our health is going to decline.
Correct.
Yeah, for some period of time before we die.
That's correct.
So what is your recommendation to clients?
So you need to manage for your long-term care expenses. You need to manage your financial affairs. You either plan on how I'm going to do this by insurance product or I'm going to do it by cash. It's one way or the other. There are certain persons that have accumulated enough cash that they can draw on that cash to pay for care as they need it, because traditional Medicare and our Medicare Advantage is not going to cover any of those expenses.
So let's talk about the savings approach. How much money would someone need to set aside to be reasonably confident? And of course, we realize none of us knows.
I don't know, but $200,000 to $300,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, how do you arrive at that number?
Oh, that's just a random number. It's because there is no way. On average, and when you base it, it's kind of silly, but I base that upon the average cost for a long-term care facility is anywhere from $100 to $300 a day. So if we stay on the conservative side and just say it's $100 a day to use long-term care facility, so that's $3,000 a month or $36,000 a year. $100,000 is just 3 years of care.
Right. And realistically, I think that's too optimistic. And I know you don't disagree with me. It's more like five to seven thousand, even in this area among better shoppers.
Correct. And so my point was $200,000 to $300,000 is like opening bid. It's just you better have some kind of a cash asset to cover that kind of expense.
But your point is, and I think that you're being too dismissive about your thought that went into that, because we talked about this a little earlier, I appreciate that there is a lot of guesswork.
Yeah.
But you know, that number says that someone could, if they go into long-term care, statistics show that they're going to be in there on average around 3 years. Is that what I was
three
the
to five years?
3 to 5 years. Yeah,
gotta have 3 to 5 years.
So you know, you're kind of backing into that number. So for our listeners, if they want to assign a larger number, and incidentally on the East Coast, it's more like $10,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And so if they want to assign a larger number and they want to think conservatively, they could easily say 60 months. They could say 36 months. But it's $360,000 at 3 years at $10,000. And then, of course, there's inflation. So your point that $300,000 would probably be...
It's just some marial kind of a number. And there's a great parallel. I tell everybody when you go to prospectus, most of the persons that are 60 to 65, you probably have paid or you've enjoyed the privilege to put your child through college. My point being, it's a similar parallel conversation. How much do I need to save for college education? Well, it's everywhere from your spectrum. Do you want to go to a Harvard or do you want to go to UMSL or Merrimack? And everything in between is possible. So it's really a personal decision and the personal lifestyle of that family and the expectations of their caregivers. If I raised a family like my father did of 11 children without a lot of luxuries, do I need a real, is my expectation of that general genre? If I am more on the opposite side too of it, one, it was an affluent family, and now I come to my senior years, I'm looking for a more affluent option. And it's everywhere in between. So that's why that number I said was just as a random beginning opening bid.
But here's what is frustrating to many of our listeners. We've talked about this before, Susan. Mm-hmm. You know, if people are poor, then they have their long-term care costs covered because it'll be covered through Medicaid. And many,
at the moment.
At the moment, but that's not on the horizon, at least that we see now, that would change. And that discussion could be affected by the repeal and replace, et cetera, of Obamacare. But as it stands now, if you're poor, you're going to have your long-term care covered.
Yep.
If you're wealthy, you're covered because you have the $300,000 or $500,000 and you're prepared to write that check each month. it's that huge bulge in the middle, which I know describes many of our listeners who are in a position where they've scraped and saved and put together maybe a total net worth at 65 of $500,000 with their house, maybe $700,000. And now they're being informed that entire amount could be liquidated to cover for their long-term care. I mean, that is a depressing thought to many
people
out there.
It's a depressing thought, but it's a reality thought. And that's really more than the solution of how do I go about paying for it, is the realization that, you know, the Lord gave us a life from birth to whatever time that he's going to call us home. And there's going to be expenses everywhere along that way. And so if I end up at the end of the day with zero, I didn't lose the game. There's a notion that we want to hold on to that by what we accumulated and worked on. But if we need to spend that money for my parents' care at that point, sorry that my brothers and I, we don't get to split the value of this home. We had to sell that home to pay for their care, but we took care of our parents. We took care of them. We liquidated their assets. I'm still able-bodied. I'm still working. I'm still going to have my life. My point is it's that general expectations that we cannot hold an iron fist on our assets and say, oh my gosh, if I deplete that or have to deplete that, something beyond that my psyche can handle. And it's, you have to face it and plan for it accordingly.
Yeah, and that's a good point, is what is the motivation? And there is this reaction by which we think we have to cling to liquidity as we age because we feel such a sense of insecurity. We feel that something's going to come around the corner.
Yes.
And suddenly we're going to need to be able to write a check or terrible things are going to happen.
We summarily put this $500,000 problem if it's going to occur in 1 month. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, because now it depends what caused my care. If my underlying care was I had a massive heart attack, I'm not going to survive by under normal terms 5 to 8 years, although it's possible for some people. So, and then you can't do not underestimate the value of what family and friends or what persons, just what ingenuity, we're going to come up with alternative styles of care.
You're an optimist by nature.
This isn't an issue that we buy insurance from everything from great. The answer, the point of the discussion, purchasing long-term care insurance, it is a option. It's not the option. There's a whole slew of other alternatives of planning and personal financial planning that can address these issues.
Mike, I don't see how you make a good living with this optimism. You know, when you're selling insurance, it's supposed to be that the sky is falling, a good chance the sky is going to fall at any moment.
Yeah.
And so you need to pay these premiums. But your point's well taken. And let me hurry in defense of those, though, who are frustrated, at least, maybe not depressed, but frustrated at the notion that they may have to liquidate what they've saved. Is some of them have children, have special needs, or they simply have children that they want to give an advantage that perhaps they didn't have.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it may be a first generation that has accumulated a significant amount, and the fact that they can't leave that advantage to their kids. So it's not an unworthy motive, and I know that you weren't suggesting it was, but your point's well taken. You know, if we're able to cash out of the world and we don't leave debts behind, we don't leave our kids with debts, then you know, that's not a bad outcome.
You just scratched on a big topic, though. That's a big challenge for our culture. The average senior's coming through. They're carrying a lot of debt still. We are still carrying debt. And that's just because that's the American way. That's a reality that part of that financial planning is we better get real active to retire my debt. Mm-hmm.
So you mean these people who we've been talking about, these challenges relating to healthcare as they turn 65, you mean many of them statistically have in addition existing debt balances that have to be serviced?
We can research that for a fellow show because I don't want to quote this as a fact, but I would think it'd be very simple to guess there would be a minority whose homes are paid off. Well, their mortgages are still going. They bought new car loans. They bought vacation homes. They're paying off college loans
for kids.
They're still supporting a child who maybe didn't venture off on their own. Mm-hmm. I started a new business. I went on to a business venture at the age of 70, and I went in debt to go with it. There's lots of those installment issues to be involved. Yeah, absolutely.
So maybe we should be telling our kids that they should borrow the money in their name and we shouldn't co-sign on those notes. What do you think, Susan?
I'm not signing on my kids.
It is an awareness of the planning for our senior years. It's this to counter the notion, life is going to become less expensive when I'm older. That is a non-truth. It's a non-truth.
Can we back up to the long-term care? Because here's a question I have. When you talked about all of the different ways that long-term care and the many things that we're going to have to do, one of the things that we talked about in previous shows is home health care. Mm-hmm. And what about, will long-term care coverage include some of that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that's
another way that maybe we don't have to go into this $7,000 a month nursing facility. We can extend our time at home, but still take advantage of the long-term care insurance and having that kick in.
Exactly. There, okay. So the long-term care insurance can help on the home health care services, but at the same token, the home health care service, which will be more likely to be incurred before I have that facility mm-hmm. to be involved, that the cost of that service is going up exponentially because of supply and demand. What you just laid out is very commonsensical, but now we've got a mass population thinking that way, meaning we've got this bulging demand for home health care services. We don't have enough workers. And those workers are going to get higher wages as they go along. They're going to get more. And so the one who's going to be able to pay more is going to get more of that.
And we already see this. I mean, all these home health care services in which these employees, for the most part, are unskilled. And
you
I'm not
bet.
Picking on them.
No.
I mean, I think all these franchises, I won't mention any names, but all these franchises that all of us know, we hear them advertised, we see them around the corner, must be several hundred at least that have come into existence in the last 10 years. And if you visit Florida, I mean, they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is these people are billed at the rate of around $25 or more an hour. And these essentially are unskilled workers. They're companions who are there and they help you with simple tasks. But by no means are these people who are especially skilled. And your point's well taken. They have trouble filling these positions.
Yeah.
So soon they're going to be actually paying these people $20 an hour. And that means that probably
your
the people
cost is
getting
going to be higher.
Yeah, the services will be over $30 in metropolitan areas across the country. So there's no question that's coming. We're coming up on about with three more minutes, and I want to have you talk a little bit about long-term care insurance. Mm-hmm. I think that clearly we've set the stage for that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about what the product is and what are some options that people have, and is it a reasonable alternative to address the fact that Medicare is not covering long-term care costs?
It is a reasonable alternative. The danger of it is it's a non-guaranteed product. That's going to be the real danger going along with it. The premiums are not guaranteed. So whatever I enroll with it today, 10 years from now, when this population comes, those rates are still going to be higher. So what am I really buying is the great unknown. So you got to really talk that through. On average, you would want a policy that's going to be having anywhere from 3 to 5 years of benefit to pay for you. On average, you don't want the long-term care policy to cover dollar for dollar of your expenses. You've got to put your personal assets at risk.
It's going to be affordable.
Yes, you've got to be a defense mechanism than an offensive mechanism.
Yeah, so if people are shopping for something that's going to assure they're not out a nickel, they can probably find that. But it's going to cost a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it because if I died... If my mortality came at the extent of my father passed away from, he was delivering food for a food pantry and died 5 days later, the long-term care policy would have never done any good.
Yeah.
Follow what I'm saying? So, I mean, you're dedicating a lot of resources for something that it may not even come to fruition for you. We talk about this on the macro. So this is true for our population, but is it going to affect you? Is it going to affect me? That I don't know. So you want this as a balance. You don't want this as the answer to my financial planning. It's a part that we want to consider and work with strategically.
And that makes sense. I mean, and of course, qualification. We have about a minute left. Is it difficult to qualify for the long-term care insurance?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it difficult, but I wouldn't call it not difficult. The people that are going to be most acutely interested in it probably have some underlying condition. That's what creates the interest. If I'm 60 and still running marathons and I'm still my high school weight, I'm not interested in long-term care yet because I haven't turned sick yet.
Okay, and give us, we have 60 seconds left. In terms of age ranges where it might make the most sense strategically to think about it, is there a general rule of thumb? I've heard 50s, I've heard 60s.
55 to 60.
Okay, is the ideal statistically?
Right now, you would want to be looking at it. And then if you get really acute with it, 65 to 70.
Okay, all right. And let me say one other thing in wrapping up here. We haven't talked about it because that wasn't the purpose of this show, but I want to give some additional encouragement. There are people who may not consider themselves as potentially eligible for Medicaid, but with proper planning, Medicaid is an option for a lot more people than you would realize. But it does require very specialized training, and that's something that Cordell Planning Services does. And I know there are other attorneys, elder law attorneys, who practice in that area. So I just want to drop that as an encouraging word to those of you who've been listening to the show and thinking, oh my gosh,
what am I going to do?
Yeah. But I such
talk about it. Ignoring it doesn't do anything.
Such useful, insightful stuff. Mike Butts, we got to have you back here to talk more. Can you come back?
Anytime. I'd be happy to.
Tell us the name of your firm.
It's MB Health. My initial is MB Health, and we're just an insurance consulting firm.
And if you want to talk to him, you can talk to him at mbhealth.co.
Thank you very much, Mike. We'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.